Welcome to Beyond Rent, the property management podcast brought to you by Rent Manager. Each episode, we sit down with an expert to talk industry updates, tech solutions, and top tips for those in the property management space. And now, let's get to the conversation and go Beyond Rent.
Everyone, and welcome to Beyond Rent. Today, we are going to get an education on applied behavioral analytics. If you aren't sure what that is, then make sure you lean into this conversation as Dr. Krista Peterson is an expert in helping companies best align their staff with roles and objectives and use analytics over instincts. Dr. Peterson, welcome to Beyond Rent.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this conversation. This is a method, a technique that we actually use here at our company. So I am familiar with it. I have a little bit of practice using it, but obviously I'm not an expert like you are. So I'm ready to learn more along with our audience today. So super excited for that. Before we get started with the actual conversation, I want to make sure our audience knows more about you and maybe a little bit of your past, your history, your experience. So go ahead and introduce yourself to the audience.
Okay. So I am a clinical psychologist by training. My career started in the forensic evaluation realm. And so I went into to be a psychologist because I wanted to help people. And working in the forensic space for about 5 or 6 years after graduate school, I enjoyed what I did. I have thousands of hours evaluating people and personality. And then I learned about this organization or how I could help people at scale by moving more into the business side of psychology. And so I integrated that into my practice and probably about 5 years in, I was so inundated with referrals that I ended up shutting my forensic practice down, and I've been working with business owners ever since. So it's been about 12 years.
That's amazing. It's always interesting to understand how people kind of move through their careers and find their passion in the place they fit best. And that's really interesting that you enjoyed what you were doing, but you said you want to do it at scale. You want to be able to help more people faster. What kind of led you that direction? What made you feel like you had, I guess, more offer to more people?
In the forensic space, I worked with a completely different kind of population. And I found myself spending a lot of time after I would do an evaluation with a patient, I would have to spend a lot of time going back and sifting through reports and big boxes of data. And it would take me a long time to compile all that information, write a good report, and then go testify in court. And so again, while I really enjoyed doing that, it was, I could help maybe one or two patients at a time, where now I'm working with businesses where I'm not just working with the C-suite, but ultimately filtering down within the entire organization. So there's just a larger reach this way.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I'm glad you found this passion that you have, because I know we get a lot of benefit from it. So let's jump right in and really talk about what this is. So set the stage for us. What is applied behavioral analytics?
Okay. So really, just first and foremost, what I do here is I help companies build and sustain enterprise value. And so we're using applied behavioral analytics in order to do so. And what applied behavioral analytics is it's really using science to understand, predict, and influence human behavior. So it combines principles from psychology along with unique test construction to yield data points, which we can then use to identify patterns and optimize P&L outcomes. Okay. So let me put that into layman's terms. 10% of where I spend my time then is helping my client companies first identify what the right seat looks like. So from a hiring perspective, let's define the right seat. And we use applied behavioral analytics in order to break down the job, really kind of analyzing what the requirements are based on the predefined deliverables for the role. And then that yields some data points for us. Then when it comes to hiring, we go and we look at the applicants. We use applied behavioral analytics to analyze our applicants, and then we compare that against the benchmark. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. So it all starts with understanding what the role is, right? In reality, a lot of companies actually really struggle with that, right? This idea of like, well, we had the right person and they had these skills, so we created this role and then it evolved into this or moved into this area, or we think we need help in these areas, so we're going to create a marketing role or a sales role. But it goes a little bit further. You're saying you really have to understand what the deliverables are in every single role.
Yeah. So when I say deliverables, and companies will use like KPIs or OKRs, when I say deliverables, I'm thinking about outcome goals. So what do you want them to achieve? And then really more importantly, or what are the process goals in order to achieve the outcome goals? And the more clear you can be with those items, the better off the employee is going to be for the long haul anyway. That's one piece. But then the second piece is taking that information and putting it into really we're asking you a series of questions that cause you to break down the role. So now based on a personality standpoint, what kind of person can fill that seat effectively?
Okay, so what type person can fill that seat effectively? Is that a broad range of types of people, or is it typically a certain type of person can fit a very specific type of role?
Well, it's not a one size fits all, Joe. So it could be that we have a couple different types of people that would be ideal for that position. And then there's going to be some scenarios where it really there is really one type of person that they're looking for. And so it depends on the organization.
Oh, and the organization itself, more even less than the role itself. It's kind of what that organization's goals are.
Sure. It could be what the role requires. You know, what are the overall strategic targets of the business? Who's this person going to be reporting to? That definitely plays a role into when we define the seat. Who are they going to be leading up to? Who are they even going to be working around? And are there any landmines that we need to be paying attention to? If we put this right person here, are they going to jive well with everybody around them?
And that's not something that I always think about when I think about hiring people. I do think about this idea of the right person for the right seat. I think that's kind of a common phrase that I've heard people repeat, but not always who are they working with or who are they working around or who do they report to. It's more role driven. So this is a pretty dynamic process.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when go ahead.
No, keep going.
Well, I was going to say, so as I think about that, there's a lot of data points that are involved then because you have different types of people, because even on a team, even if they have a very similar role, they may not be the same type of personality or have the same results from these different tests and processes that you go through.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so we started that conversation with 10% of where I spend my time is there. So then 90% of where I spend my time is once you have talent on board, you have to understand how to deploy them. So how do we manage, motivate, and communicate with them to do one, maximize every payroll dollar, okay? But also in the same sentence, we can say, how do we empower these people so that they want to stay with us for long periods of time? So that we make sure that they're fully engaged, they enjoy what they do, they feel challenged, they see future opportunity with our organization. And so we can continue to develop them and keep them.
Which is really the goal, right? So it is that idea of retention, the right people doing the right jobs long term, which isn't easy. When we look at the job market, I know it goes back and forth and there's different cycles that we go through, but keeping people long term seems like it's a harder and harder thing to do than maybe it was in the past. We talk about longevity and tenure and loyalty in different roles. Is that something that you focus in on and you think about it, like how the culture is even changing and impacting how long people stay in different roles?
And you know, Gallup does polls year over year on employee engagement. And actually 2025's data is pretty staggering. It is the most staggering since 2014. So even during the COVID years, the numbers weren't as bad as they are now. And so what I mean by that is they've found that 69% of working Americans are at least somewhat disengaged. Okay. And so what you risk there when somebody is somewhat disengaged is first poor productivity. Yeah. If they're not fully locked and loaded, they're not probably giving you their all. So you've lost productivity. Then we have that term. I don't know if you've heard the term of quiet quitting. So we get a lot of quiet quitting, and then that's going to result in turnover, and then turnover is expensive. I mean, rule of thumb is 3 times annual salary for one person to turn. So it's really expensive. It's a huge problem, and data is showing us that it's getting worse.
Yeah, and that is what I hear. And maybe for anyone that has not heard that term, quiet quitting seems like it's a newer term that has been bouncing around a little bit. How would you define quiet quitting?
I guess I don't have a formal definition of it. You don't know that they're going to leave you. So you think everything's good. And if I ask a company, do you know who's engaged and who's not? Rarely somebody tells me they know. Okay, and if you don't know, you're already in trouble. And so these are the individuals, if we don't know if they're engaged, it's possible that they're looking for other jobs and tomorrow they could put in their resignation and you don't know why. And so part of what we do is uncover some of that risk, and then we can help to monetize if somebody is overutilized, by what percent, what kind of pain is that causing this person? Are they underutilized? Why are you not getting their full payroll dollars, and why, and how do we get in front of that? And so we're able to identify risk based on, again, using these applied behavioral analytics in order to do so.
So tell me more about that process. And you said you spent a lot of your time kind of in this area of retention and understanding this. So you talked about being over or underutilized. So overutilized is burnout, right? Is that another way to say that somebody is being overworked and overstressed in their role?
Yeah, ultimately it could lead to burnout. Okay. But you can also be in a position where, you know, say the business ebbs and flows at different times of year and you're going through a big growth spurt, which is causing you to give more than you have to be successful in your role. You know, you can handle that amount of stress and pressure for, you know, a good deal of time before it's going to burn you out. If you like your job, if you're in a role that aligns with who you are naturally, you can sustain some of that. It's when you're acting outside of character, so you're being somebody you're not, and then we're going through all these stresses and pressures, that's what's going to lead to burnout.
That's really interesting. So what I heard there is if they like their job, if it's a natural fit for them, which is part of this whole process, right? Trying to find what is a natural fit for them, they can actually withstand being overutilized for a certain amount of time. Now, how long is that? Is that variable by person, by role, what does that look like?
Yeah, it's variable by person. And it's something that we measure. We can measure how big some, let's just call it a battery size. We can measure how big somebody's battery is. And then that helps us to look at when they are overutilized, how long can they handle that until they start to feel significant amounts of stress and pressure and ultimately burnout. So what is someone's threshold for behavioral flexibility? And we can measure that.
And does that only apply to that battery size, only apply to being overutilized? Because you did talk about being in the right role, right natural fit. Is that battery impacted if they're in the wrong role?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So if we're let's just say that we're in the wrong seat, and we've got a small battery to begin with. So really we need to be our natural selves for a majority of the time so that we don't burn our batteries. Okay. And if we're in the wrong seat on the bus, and we have to go into work every day and act out of character, that causes what we call cognitive dissonance. And so we're always trying to get back to balance, get back to our natural selves. If we have a small battery to begin with, and we're acting out of character at work for a long period of time, we're going to drain quicker. And then when we drain quicker, we start to miss on things. So we start to, make mistakes. We start calling in sick to work. And then, you know, the organization should know at that point that this person's a risk.
So let's talk about the other side, the underutilized side. Is it really the same? Is it kind of the same symptoms, same issues? And how do we address those same staff people?
Yeah, that one's more of a loaded question there. So underutilized could be a result of many things. It could be that they're in the wrong seat, so wrong peg, square hole. It also could mean that if we look at the macro trend across profiles, so across employees, are we losing a lot of battery from multiple people? And if so, then it might be a larger issue in terms of culture. It could be on a team. It could be that we're losing a lot of battery, or we have a bunch of underutilized employees under one manager. Well, then the problem is probably the manager, and that's where we have to start in terms of solving that problem. And it could be that they're just not challenged, and there might be some things that we could do in order to, I like to call it, treating them how they want to be treated, or the platinum rule. So treating them based on what their unique traits are. And maybe it's just something simple of, hey, they need a new challenge. And they're not giving you their full battery. So we have to somehow figure out, how do we get the full battery?
And is that new challenge typically a different role, or is it even in the same role, just finding new ways to engage their skills?
Yep. It could be either.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. And I love the concept. Again, I mentioned earlier, the right person, the right seat. You kind of started there saying by defining the right seat. I know I've witnessed this. I've actually witnessed this myself. This whole idea of being in the right seat and how it can be really motivating and really encouraging. Obviously, we here at LCS and Rep Manager, we use a system that uses applied behavioral analytics. And what's really, really interesting about the system that we are using is it has like a personality profile to it. And then it has a role profile, but the role profile is really based on how that person feels about their role, what they perceive the role takes to be successful. So it kind of, like you were saying, that platinum role, treating them how they want to be treated. It's like, well, they're a certain type person, but they think the role requires them to be something maybe the same or different, and how it creates some of those struggles there. When I look at different, behavioral or personality quizzes and things that I've done in the past, most of them aren't really comparing to anything, right? Most personality tests are just saying, who are you as a person?
Yeah.
And I guess, why is there a difference in the different types of personality programs out there, if I were to simplify it with that term?
I can't really speak to the other measures out there. What we've tried to do is, well, first off, we're looking at personality. So who are you when nobody else is looking? And the reason we're going to measure personality is because we know it stays stable over time. Okay. So your personality doesn't change. And we know that it stabilizes around the ages of 8 to 12 years old. Okay. We ask about how somebody has to modify in order to meet the demands of the role, because that's what helps us understand, are they being, one, treated how they want to be treated? Are they in the right seat on the bus? And how do we monetize that for our clients? So are we fully optimizing that talent? Okay. So for us, it's a no-brainer to ask that question, because it helps us not only let's get the right person in the right seat, but now that they're in the right seat, it's our job as leaders to deploy them effectively. Okay. So if we think about it from a financial standpoint, how do we maximize the return on that asset?
Yeah. And it's really the right way to look at it. I know some people might think, well, it seems a little inhumane, right, to think of people as assets or whatever it may be, but it isn't, right? Because we're really saying we want to put the person in a role, in a place where they can be fulfilled by the job as well and provide the highest amount of value to the company.
Yeah. I mean, and they are an asset. Okay. People are the source of all of an organization's leverage, and all the problems that the company has are typically tied back to people in some capacity. And so if we were to focus more on everybody has their own gifts, right? There's no good, bad, right, or wrong to this. It's all about how do we leverage their individual gifts in order to achieve the targets that we've predefined. And so humans are assets. It isn't humane to say it that way. We just have to learn how to better treat them. And so we can get the most out of them. And then they feel, like I said, empowered to be there and stay with us for years to come.
So you talked about like there's no like good or bad or any of those. So it really kind of begs me to ask the question, is there a seat on the bus for everyone, right? So when I think of an organization, whether you have five people or 500 people, right? There's all types of different skills and personalities and things like that. So you walk into a scenario like that, let's say there's hundreds of employees. Are there people that are not even getting on the right bus, right? They're actually not a good fit for the organization, or is it really just a means of finding the right place for the right person?
Yeah. I mean, there is a place, there is a seat for everybody. Now, granted that, they're the right culture fit. Okay. Cause some people just aren't going to be a fit for your organization. And, you know, they have a good amount of integrity, ambition. I can't measure those things, unfortunately. So those are some things that you would have to tease out in an interview, but yeah, there's a seat for everybody on the bus. And I like to think about it as having a little bit of gas. Okay. A little bit of brake and a little bit of glue. And so when I do an audit on a company, I'm looking at the overall big picture. And if somebody tells me, hey, yeah, we're really struggling with growth, we just can't get things to move forward, typically it's because the organization is missing some gas. And so we've got to add some people that are more driving. Or maybe the organization's having problems with structure. So there's not a lot of process, just procedures in place, and it's kind of a loosey-goosey workplace. Well, then we probably need to find some more people with some brake pedal. If culture is suffering and work isn't very much fun, you're probably missing some glue. And so then we need to focus on adding some glue to the organization. So everybody has a seat. It's just getting them in the right one, again, based on what some of your strategic and tactical targets are.
I really like the gas, the brake, and the glue. So when you're helping a company understand that, are there specific personality types that fit into those three categories? So you could instantly say you are a little heavy on gas, you're heavy on glue. We need to really, when we're hiring, we need to try to find people that fit these 5-10 different personality profiles.
Yeah. Yeah. And it always goes back to the job. So what have we predefined as critical for this role? And then, you know, maybe it's that you do need some more gas. And so we're predefining that. We've identified that, yep, this is actually the gap. This is what we need. And so going out and finding somebody with that can match those characteristics.
Yeah, that's great. So when I think about this, is there an example that you can give? And obviously I know when you work with clients, sharing company names and a lot of details can be a little sensitive. So I don't want to go too far there. But is there an example you can give of a situation where you've walked in and really kind of helped guide that leadership in a way that is utilizing their people, empowering their people, using a tool like this in new ways?
Yeah. So I just had a conversation. I was doing we do complementary team diagnostics. And so I was doing a team diagnostic with a real estate brokerage. And I let her do an audit on her real estate agents. And she, you know, we had a conversation about what are her goals here in the next 2 to 3 years. And she told me that she wanted to triple revenue. And so my follow-up question was, do you think you have the people in place in order to achieve that target? And she said, no, I would have to triple headcount. And so right there, I knew that there was probably more to that story. So I looked at the data and I was able to identify her top performing agent before she said anything. So we had the conversation about her and I told her that I predicted that she was likely a top performer and probably by a significant margin. And she'd said, yeah, I mean, she produces 3 to 4 times some of these other individuals that I have on board. And so then we had a discussion about, okay, so what would it look like if you were to replicate this kind of individual, would you actually have to triple headcount and triple payroll? And she'd said, no. Okay. So there's times where I go into organizations and it happens all the time in property management that in fact, they are actually overstaffed. And there are, if they were to hire the right profile, it's really like a 2-for-1 special or a 3-for-1 special, you know, and that reduces overhead. So that was just a one scenario, and, you know, and she couldn't believe it. So the plan going forward with her is to design out this ideal benchmark for the role. And then when she does go to hire new agents, she's going to replicate that profile because she knows that they can produce.
And what is so shocking or surprising or telling about that story is the fact that you already knew who that person was without actually looking at any reports, any data on their side for revenue. You knew that just based on the fact that this person's personality type spoke to you as a high performing salesperson. And so I hear that from that story. And what I also hear, because you said you see this all the time in property management, that a lot of people are actually overstaffed. It tells me they're hiring the wrong people, right? The wrong profiles. Why are people hiring the wrong profiles? And why aren't they trying to replicate the successful profiles or personality types that they already have sitting on their staff?
Well, likely they don't have access to this data. And just give you a stat here. I mean, Harvard Business Review reported that 14% of traditional hiring methods get it right. That means 86% get it wrong. Okay. So traditional hiring practices, putting a job ad out or a job description on a job board. A job description is not a job ad. Going through a resume, and now resumes are even more tricky because you got ChatGPT out there. And then we have them come in for an interview. I mean, can somebody fake who they are for 2 hours in an interview?
I guess how big is their battery, right?
Well, I mean, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can all modify for 2 hours and put forth our best selves in an interview. And then the hiring manager 6 months later is left like, I don't even know who you are. You're not who you were on paper and who I met in an interview. Mm-hmm. And so again, and the data is showing us that. So 86% of that traditional hiring practice gets it wrong. And so what we're attempting to do is go in there prior to and say, okay, look, so we're using, I'm in the probability game, really. We know that this is someone you've predefined. You've told me that these are the characteristics you want for the role. Now you can go out and look for those things before they even come in the door.
And it really is a numbers game when you're talking about hiring people. There are so many people that apply for jobs, and there's only so much time you have to look through resumes and conduct interviews. And interviews are really expensive when you think most people are not doing a singular interview, right? They're recruiting. They're doing 1, 2, 3 different rounds of interviews. Like you already said, the retention value is so high. But when you have a new employee, the cost of training and so forth is so high to go 90 days later and realize it's not the person you thought you hired. That's really disheartening for a lot of, especially, I would say, small to medium-sized business owners, especially, right? They don't necessarily have the size of staff to overcome that quickly. That's a big detriment to their growth.
Yeah. And we can look at it. It takes 7 to 10 minutes. Our survey takes 7 to 10 minutes. So it's only 2 questions. We're not asking anything clinical. There's nothing invasive on there. There's no good, bad, right, or wrong. Again, it's all about job fit. And so we're able to determine in a pretty short period of time if this person is going to be right for the organization.
Now that's wonderful. And that's really what people need. You know, you talked about the quiet quitting, and 69% of people say they're not as engaged at work as maybe they should be. You talked about that case study with that real estate agent, you know, with that top performer. Just those numbers, you know, when you really think about, and again, it doesn't matter the size of the organization. If you really had 80% or 90% performance out of your staff on average, how much faster could you grow? How much better of a product could you be producing? Like you said earlier in the conversation, for you, it was all about scale, right? How do I help more people faster? And this is a really, really great way to help people really, really fast. You had talked about how quick the methods are that you're using, right? You said 7 minutes to complete it. That's not a lot of time. That's not a lot of investment for the person taking it. So that's pretty quick there. How often are the staff seeing the results of this with the people that you consult with? Is it something common practice to actually sit down and show these profiles to the staff? And how often are they agreeing with it? Do you hear any feedback on that? Because sometimes, you know, you take one of those personality profiles and you're like, that's not me. That's not even close.
Yep. You know, I've been doing this for 12 years. I've surveyed thousands of people. And I mean, I don't even know if I could identify. Maybe two times in 12 years, I've presented this information and the person was like, yeah, that just doesn't land for me. But then when you ask those that are working around them, if that tracks, they've said that's exactly who that person is. And so, sure, I'm sure that there's going to be some, it just hasn't really happened for me. And our organization as a whole has a 90% retention rate. So the results are there. We're doing a lot of good for our organizations. And yes, the answer with regard to, should you be transparent with this data with your employees? Absolutely. Why would you want to hide it from them? The goal is to again, be a better leader, to treat you how you want to be treated so that I can maximize your value, not only for our organization, but also for you, because I mean, people spend the majority of their waking lives at work. They should be given an opportunity to be successful. Okay. So yes, to be transparent with the data. And we teach our clients how to understand what the data is showing us so that they can then go back and relay that to their employees.
Yeah, that's great. And I'm glad you said 90% retention is phenomenal. And this whole idea of it doesn't take a lot of time to get the data to really drive really positive results for these organizations. It really is important to help make sure our people are successful. It's really, and like you mentioned earlier, it's how any company is successful. It's through its people. It's all people driven every single day. And I love how you talked about how the few people that have said that, you know, that profile doesn't fit me, the people around them say it does. So that's a little bit of a self-awareness. Maybe somebody got a score they didn't. I shouldn't say score. It's not a score, but a profile they didn't think that they represented. They see themselves a little bit differently. But that's just another opportunity for growth, right? To kind of see who am I and how do I bring value to the organization? Well, as we turn the corner towards the end of the episode here, Dr. Peterson, what are some last thoughts that you have on this idea of applied behavioral analytics? Anything else that our audience really needs to know about it, how it works, anything that we missed in our conversation?
Yeah, I mean, I think we actually covered quite a bit. I would suggest this, if you guys are interested in learning more about, you know, how we measure what we measure, I'm happy to sit down and do a mini audit for you. I'll spend 60 minutes kind of looking at your leadership team and maybe some of your top performers and maybe those that aren't quite meeting expectations. Let's look at why. And if you think that we would have a good fit, you know, I'd encourage you to come on board.
That's wonderful. And we'll definitely drop some links into the show notes so people can reach out and learn more. Again, the right person in the right seat. I hear that from people all the time in the industry. They're focused on that. They're talking about it. However, I'm wondering how often they're really kind of using their gut to make that decision rather than analytics.
Yeah. And it's all the time.
Yeah.
So,
yep. A lot of business decisions are made that way. Well, again, Dr. Peterson, thank you so much for educating me and our audience on this very, very important topic. Not a lot of people are using tools like this, and I want to encourage more people to be able to do that. So thank you for your time. And I want to thank our audience for joining us today to learn about applied behavioral analytics. And until next time, keep going beyond rent.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Beyond Rent. If you enjoyed this podcast, spread the word on social media and with your peers in the industry. To be notified when more episodes are released, subscribe using your favorite podcast player. Beyond Rent is brought to you by Rent Manager Property Management Software. Learn more about Rent Manager's industry-leading software solutions at rentmanager.com. Until next time, keep going beyond rent.